Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. I'm attorney Adam Hanson, and I've got Cody Beeson with me today. We're going to have a conversation about some things that I think are really relevant to all of us as Americans. A little bit later on in the show, we're going to talk about the recent filings in the Jack Smith case in Florida pertaining to the raid of Mar-a-Lago a couple of years ago and the use of deadly force. And also, Jack Smith recently requested that the court put a gag order on President Trump. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. But before we get too far into that, if you have missed an episode, don't worry. You can go on KBLU's website and you browse for Life, Death, and the Law. And you can listen to old episodes and get caught up. And what's even easier is you just go on your phone and you look up your podcast app that you use to listen to podcasts and search for Life, Death, and the Law. And you can catch up on any episodes that you've missed.
I just find it at yuma.law.
Oh, yeah. You can go to our website, yuma.law. That's an easy one, too. Yeah. Way to go. Way to plug the website, Cody.
I thought that's where we're going.
You're so smart.
I naturally just wanted to get there.
So this week coming up, Cody and I were having a conversation before we came on the air about my plans later on in the week. This is kind of an odd story if you've not dealt with this before. To me, it's not that odd because I guess because I deal with these things every day. I ask people about what would happen if they were to pass away with their body. Do they want to be cremated? Do they want to be buried? So I'm an estate planning attorney. We want to know these things so those wishes are put forth in writing and the kids know or the loved ones know what to do at that time when they pass away so they don't have to come up with an idea themselves. I find that it's really a thing of peace of mind. There's so much to deal with when an individual that you love passes away and you don't want to be thinking about, well, what did they want? Did they want to be cremated? Did they want to be buried and all that kind of stuff? So
I'm sorry.
Go for it.
Do you think your view has changed on mortality since dealing with thousands of plans and people in different situations?
I think so. I think in the sense that...
Or you're comfortable with
I'm kind of removed from it. Yeah, I guess I have become a little bit more comfortable with it. I mean, it still shocks the conscience sometimes when it's a person that's really close to me, but as it pertains to individuals that we're doing planning for, there have been a couple that I'm like, oh man, when I hear that they've passed away, you know, it's inevitable, but I just didn't expect it that soon. But at the same time, I have peace of mind knowing that I've done everything for their family and everything's ready to rock and roll. It's just kind of like on autopilot. And that really brings me a lot of comfort. And hopefully that brings comfort to the family as well. So that's really what we're looking for. We're looking for ways to help families avoid government processes if they become incapacitated or die. We're looking for ways to efficiently transfer things from the dead person over to their beneficiaries, whoever that might be. It might be charities. It might be their kids. It might be neighbors down the street. So there's all sorts of ways to get that done legally, and that's what we pride ourselves on. And so having done this a long time, over a decade, you get kind of, I don't want to say desensitized, but when I have these conversations with clients, it's kind of like I'm having these conversations multiple times a day, dealing with their remains and what they want to do.
Maybe familiar?
Yeah, I think that's maybe what it is. And so the shock or the uncouthness of it, I think in our daily conversations is something we don't talk about or don't want to think about. It's kind of uncomfortable to think about my mortality and the fact that I might not be here tomorrow. And so I think our natural inclination is to shy away from thinking about that or even talking about it because we don't want to manifest that into the universe and make it happen. I don't want to die tomorrow and have my family deal with all that. So I'm just not going to talk about it.
Well, what you were telling me before we started, you know, was just like another day at the office. Like you're like, hey, this is what we're going to do. There's nothing to it. And I'm like, Adam.
Well, I think it's because I've been talking about it for months now. So later on this week, I'm going to make a journey down to my hometown, Wilcox, Arizona. That's where I grew up. But my family really isn't from there. My dad was a farmer growing up, and I would say, come from Washington State, a little town called Basin City. It's a farming community up in southeast Washington. And when I was little, we moved from Washington State to Utah for a short stint where my dad did some farming things. And then ultimately he moved down, he moved the family down to Wilcox, Arizona. And that's where I really grew up. I consider that's where I grew up. That's what I know as my upbringing. Because when we moved there, I think I was, I want to say 4 or 5. I was 4 or 5, I think, something like that. Well, shortly after we moved there, my mom got sick, and ultimately the diagnosis was lupus. And this was back in the late 80s and 88. So 1988, she was diagnosed with lupus. And so she had to travel to, she was in and out of the hospital for months and months. They were up in Tucson. So Tucson's about an hour drive to the west of Wilcox, Arizona, where I grew up. And so she would stay in the hospital for months and months, I remember, at a time. Ultimately, she just wasn't getting better. This lupus was just taking over her body. And my you know, non-understanding of it, my ignorant understanding of lupus is it's a chronic disease that really it takes your antibodies and they get confused and think that your body is an invasion. And so it'll start to attack your pertinent organs, like your liver and things like that. Your own body starts to eat itself or fight itself because it thinks it's a disease or an attack. And so this started to happen to my mom. And it happened, I would say, over the course of a year, year and a half. And then finally, she ultimately passes away in a hospital in Tucson. And so we did the funeral. I was six years old at the time. I have 3 older brothers. And, you know, I have pictures in my mind of that event. I have pictures, photographs that I've seen as well that lend to the memories that are in my mind now. I don't know, you know, sometimes you make things up in your mind, you think they're reality, but so I have this all in my mind of the memories. We ended up burying her in Wilcox because that's where we were at the time. My family, my dad, and my 3 brothers. And over the years, we've all left. After I graduated, I left. My brothers all left after we graduated high school. We went off out into the world and did our thing. We've not been back, really. I mean, I visit there once every, you know, 3-4 years for Rex Allen Days is the big celebration in town in the fall, which we love. And so I'll take my kids back to show them, hey, this is what I enjoyed when I was growing up here in Wilcox. And they love it. They're like, when are we moving here? We want to move here. I'm like, we're not moving here. There's nothing here, you know?
Yeah, this is what we're here for.
I want to work at the prison, but I'm not interested in that, you know? There's not much to do here. But I do love Rex Allen. I love the feel there. I love the little community. It's a quaint little place, and I absolutely love it because it's familiar to me. You know, it's nostalgic. And so, long story short, Mom is still there, even though we've all left. For decades, we've been gone. And I have no family over there because, again, we were transplants in the late 80s to this place. And all my family's gone. And so it leaves Mom over there in Wilcox in that cemetery. And so over the years, my dad has expressed, now that my grandparents, his parents, have passed away, they're all buried up in Utah in the place where my dad grew up, in a beautiful cemetery. And it has a lot of Hansons in it. Like, it's part of it. You have to be a Hanson to be in that cemetery. So it's his family. And he kept dropping hints like, you know, oh, I wish I could kind of be up here. And he would talk about it every once in a while, just a little bit, you know, he'd drop it in conversations. And then ultimately my brothers and I, in consultation with him, said, well, let's just move Mom. Let's move Mom up there. And then when you pass away, you can go there too, because we've already got the headstone down in Wilcox. And I didn't know that was actually a possibility until a few years ago when my aunts and uncles did this with my grandpa. He was down in Wilcox, but my grandma had passed away up in Utah. And so she was buried up in Bear River and getting ready for that event. So my aunts and uncles disinterred my grandfather down in Wilcox and then moved his body up to Bear River. So it's a thing you can do, you know? In theory, I just didn't know. I've never done it before. And so these conversations came up, and we just decided, you know what, we're in a place in our lives right now, me and my brothers and my dad, where we can do this. So let's do it while we can. And so we kind of assigned roles. One of my brothers was assigned to coordinate that move. And that, this, when we were talking before, Cody, you had questions about, well, how does that work? Legally, you can't move dead remains across state lines without permission from the government.
Is that like a state law, a federal law? Like,
I don't know. I know it's definitely state. It must be state because it's state to state. Like, Utah has to give you permission to travel around in Utah with dead remains.
So you have like
Arizona has to do it.
So every state. So if you had to go like all the way to Washington state, you'd have to go through multiple bureaucratic steps to do this.
Yeah. And we talked about this before, you know, for me, my mom, she was buried traditionally. So she's in a coffin. That coffin is inside a cement vault, which I didn't know all this stuff until we started getting into this process. And, what that pertains, it was explained to me, and I've Googled the images and stuff like that, but this, we're talking 1989. So she's been buried since 1989, and we don't know the condition of the vault or the casket. The hope is that it worked. Like, we have, my dad had insurance on the vault, meaning that if anything happened to that vault, if it's all cement, it's a cement vault. It's kind of like what was explained to me, like a butter dish, if you want to think of a butter dish. So they lower the casket down. There's already the slab bottom part of that casket or of the vault there. It's like a rectangular piece of cement. And then once the casket is rested on it, then they lower the butter dish top part over the casket, and the weight of that cement domed vault, once it rests down, that there's kind of like a weather stripping kind of thing that's supposed to seal it, so moisture isn't supposed to penetrate that, bugs are supposed to be, you know, not be able to get in there. So all these things are supposed to happen, but we don't know. It's been since 1989. We don't know the condition of that cement. Did it fail? Did moisture seep through? And even if it did, was it enough to spoil the casket? So these are a lot of unknowns we don't know. So the plan is this week on Wednesday, I have to drive down to Wilcox. Huh. I'm taking a trailer. I'm driving my truck with a trailer, flatbed trailer. That's what they said would be the best. The cemetery down there. And they're going to disinter her. So they're going to dig down in my dad's side with a backhoe because he's not there yet. He's not dead. So they're going to use a backhoe to dig down next to mom. With the backhoe, do a lot of that work, and then with shovels, now that they're down next to the vault, with shovels and by hand, now they can kind of start, like an archaeological project, start digging around the vault and freeing that up and hand-digging that. So they'll do that, and then they'll get it out of the ground, and then they're going to load it onto the trailer. Then I'm going to start my journey up to Utah to her new resting place, and so this goes to what you were asking before. Can you cross state lines? In theory, you know, if I've heard from a lot of clients, I took these remains, you know, because they're cremated. They just take their loved ones in their car over to California, dump them in the ocean, or take them around here and there or whatever. And that's, I mean, technically you're supposed to have a permit for that, but nobody knows. So it's easier to ask for forgiveness than it is permission. That's my outlook on that. But when you're carrying around a body in a casket, that's a problem. It's kind of like...
It's an operation. That's a whole thing.
Yeah. So I ordered like a tarp. We through our company, and Cody, you're aware of this, right? Yeah. We have our own little printing company, not because we are in the printing business, but we do a lot of printing of just materials and advertisements and things like that. So it made economic sense to just create a little LLC for the purpose of printing. And Cody and I have, over the years, used this little company to do flyers and to do big things. Some of those things are vinyl billboards because we needed those. And they're kind of cheap compared to, you know, posters and things like that because there's a lot of square footage you can get for a relatively good price, would you say?
Are you telling me you custom printed a banner for this?
I did. I absolutely did. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so I didn't know what to do. You know, I have this flatbed trailer and I've got this cement vault on it. I'm pretty sure as I'm driving down the highway across state lines, like I'm pretty sure you could tell that hey, that's a dead person.
So I mean, so you're right. You definitely do want to cover it.
Yeah.
So what's on the banner?
I had the hardest time coming up with something. I was gonna do like Trump 2024. You know, it's going to be the week of, it's next week. So by the time we get up there, it is going to be 4th of July time.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe fireworks and stuff like that. But I'm like, but again, it's my mom. Like, I don't, you know. But and then I was like, well, I want to be able to use this banner afterwards, too. It's like I'm trying to double dip.
Or I make it two sides, yeah. So I'm going to use the other
I'm
side
a
later.
Horrible person. So then I was like, well, maybe I put our advertisements for the firm on there.
And now it's a write-off.
But then I felt really sleazy about that, like an ambulance chaser, you know? Like, yeah. It's my face and Sean's face. And Deason Garner and Hanson Law, call 928-783-4466. I was like, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't pull the trigger on that one. So ultimately, I just put, what ended up happening was we decided, okay, we're going to do this big move of mom. And let's just go ahead and make it into like this reunion. It's been a long time since all three brothers and their families have been together. So we're going to call it a reunion at the same time.
Okay.
And so my dad said, well, we need shirts. If this is a reunion, we need shirts.
Nice.
And I said, I'm on it. I can do a design, Dad, for you using AI. I didn't tell him AI. I just made him think that I'm incredibly talented and creative. But I used AI to generate a 1972, because they were married in 1972. So he said, years ago, we came up with this kind of like logo brand for the overall Hanson family, which consists of my dad's signature. So I've got one right here, Cody, and you've seen that. So that's my dad's signature, and I vectorized that, and then I created a logo out of it.
You know what you need.
What do I need?
A Hanson flag.
Oh, jeez. It's getting too much now. Dude, it's just ridiculous.
Just need one.
So anyway, my dad's like, yeah, I would like it to say established 1972 on it. Have you seen that? Have you seen that kind of stuff? I'm like, yeah, Dad, I've seen that. But not established, just EST, 1972. Okay, Dad, I can do that. So I went to AI and I said, I need a 1970s type logo, like background.
Yeah.
And that's what it gave me. Not nice. Bad.
No, it's very cool.
Pretty cool. It's vintage looking, right? And then it says established 1972.
So that's on the banner.
That's what I did ultimately. I was like, I'll just keep the theme of this whole reunion. And I did a huge banner. Basically, it's a tarp. So what I did was I ordered it. You have options to do grommets, you know. I did grommets every 2 inches because I think we're going to have to tie it down. I really don't know. But I wanted to be ready to cover that casket. And so I'm ready, man. Hopefully. We got to go to break. We'll continue this weird story after this. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this. You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and Law. I'm attorney Adam Hanson, and it's me and Cody today. We're flying the duo. And Sean Garner is out, and so is Tom Sparks, but that's okay. We can run this show, can't we?
Yeah. I mean, I this is a very fascinating topic.
I guess so.
1,000% estate planning related.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I wanted to ask you, like, when you had that conversation with your dad about, you know, where do you want your final resting place? Was that, like, through, you know, doing his estate plan, or is it just over time he mentioned it and dropped those hints, or... You know, did you have to get all that in place?
Over time. And I did do his estate plan years ago. And in that, he's like, obviously, when I asked that question, cremation or burial, he was not down for cremation. I've found, and you asked my last segment, you asked me about how or if my mindset has kind of changed about these types of things, because I do it every day, so much every day, talking about cremation, burial, and what your wishes are. And so I've been really fascinated by... Coming into this, I thought, to me, cremation was always kind of like a faux pas. I don't know if that's just the culture that I grew up in or my religion or church kind of influence on me. Like, it's a no-no. Cremation would be a no-no, you know. But over time, that has really kind of gotten more soft. In Latin American countries, I mean, that is the default because they're out of room, especially over... I lived in Spain for a couple of years. You go to Puerto Rico, for example... These Hispanic countries, that's the default because they just don't have a lot of room in their cemeteries. And so cremation, and in Oriental countries as well. And so I think most religions have kind of become a little bit more soft on it, including the Catholic religion, right? Mm. I think it was an old tradition. I don't want to say it this way, but I'm going to. I think it's kind of this old mindset of when you die, you have to bury that body traditionally, you know. But I think what I'm getting to is, I would say, out of the many people that I meet with, thousands of people that I meet with and do planning for legally, I would say 95% of those people choose cremation as opposed to traditional burial. And that, I was really fascinated by that. And it's usually for one reason alone that they come up with. It's, well, isn't it cheaper? I'm like, I don't know.
But, I mean, that's all relative, because if you really want to be cheaper, you can go to Mexico and for $75, you know, get cremated.
Well, personally, you know, talking about wishes, I would love to, like, a Viking burial where you just put my body, you stack it up on some wood, put it on a raft, push it out, and then you shoot a flaming arrow and light it up. That would be so awesome. But I don't know. You know, I don't know how much that costs.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to go to another country to do that.
Why?
It'd have to be Mexico or somewhere else.
Well, we could do it in Puerto Peñasco, down in Rocky Point.
That'd be nice. Use a flare gun.
Floating with the diapers and stuff. Is that a diaper? Yeah. Good old Puerto Peñasco. So getting back to the topic at hand. So I was talking last segment about this great adventure that we're going to go on. We're going to disinter my mother down in Wilcox, Arizona. I'm going to put her onto a trailer, and then we're going to drive her up to her what now will be her final resting place.
And let me ask you, is there anything legally you have to do with Arizona to start that process?
We talked about that. We were getting into this last segment, right? So I made mention of the fact that we have a lot of clients here at our office. When they're doing planning, they'll tell me stories about, oh yeah, we just, you know, mom and dad, we just drove them over to California, dumped them in the ocean. So technically, because they were an ash form, technically you're supposed to have permits to do that. But I think a lot of people just kind of do it. If nobody knows, then so be it. But with a body, like in my case, I have a coffin that I have to drive from here to Utah. We're talking probably, I think it's going to be a 13, 14 hour trip.
I'm assuming you're getting the concrete vault too, right?
Yeah. They're going to load everything up onto that flatbed trailer. And I can't really hide that. I mean, I bought this banner, like I talked about, to kind of cover it, but still, you're going to see the outline of that's a coffin.
I mean,
you're like, that guy's got a coffin on the back of his trailer.
I mean, dude, it takes a tractor.
I would bet money on that.
It takes a tractor to move this stuff.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to load it on there. I don't know if they're going to use a forklift. I don't know what they're going to do. It's not my problem. I'm paying them to get her out of the ground and onto my trailer, and I'll take it from there.
I'm assuming there's a backhoe at both locations.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, it's not like it's something that the brothers are all going to be able to pick up and do. Like, it takes machinery.
Yeah, no, right. I mean, I could do it myself. But.
Okay.
No, you're exactly right. I think so. What's happening here is we're coordinating. Both funeral directors or cemetery directors are coordinating with each other.
Okay.
So the one here in Arizona, in Wilcox, he is getting the permits for us. They're going to load mom onto the trailer for me and then give me something physical, I'm guessing, I'm hoping. And then I keep that in my truck as I make my journey up to Utah. Once I think they're going to email, I think, the other one from Utah. So the Utah people are going to email the other one that I can print out and keep. So if I get stopped along the way in either Arizona or Utah and that highway patrolman's like, you got a dead body on the back, you can't do that. You know, you can't travel around with a dead person. I'd be like, oh yeah, watch me. I've got this right here, buddy, that says I can. So I've got this little permit that allows me to roam around Arizona. I can go on a joy ride, go show mom the Grand Canyon, you know, the North Rim, and then head on up to Utah, show her some polygamy on the way. I think there's Colorado City on the border.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, going into Utah. This is the path that I have to go.
Oh, so you're going through Colorado City.
I am, because I have to give a presentation that Friday up in Flagstaff.
Oh, awesome.
With Sean. So Sean and I have been asked to, we sit on all these boards, legal boards of boring attorneys that are in this area.
Wait a minute.
And they ask us to do presentations all the time.
Is she going to be in the parking lot while you're doing this presentation in Flagstaff?
I don't know. Again, I've got the banner. Okay. The banner is supposed to solve these issues. And that's another question. Like, it's going to take me days. I'm getting her on Wednesday. That's the plan. Unless there's some problems. They don't know how that concrete vault is held up. It's been since 1989. But they don't know how the coffin is. So they're going to get it out. And then they're going to be like, okay, if there's issues, I've budgeted a day for that. So if they can't get her out cleanly on Wednesday, I've got until Thursday to get her out. And then I got to get up to Flagstaff by Friday of this week to do that presentation. And then from there, I'll take mom from Flagstaff up to the 15, up to, it's north of Salt Lake. So I'll grab the 15 and just keep going up. But to do that, I've got to go up the north rim of the Grand Canyon. It spits me out Colorado City.
Yeah.
Take some pictures, you know, and then keep going. My brother, I was talking to him yesterday about this. He's like, I'm pretty sure Warren Jeffs is still running the show in Colorado City.
Isn't he in prison?
He is. Isn't that interesting?
Well, I mean, I thought he's running it from behind bars.
Yeah, that's what I don't know. Yeah. I haven't. My brother was talking about this. This is fascinating to me. But whatever. I'll go ask. I'll go ask around. They're going to be like, do you have a body on the back of your truck? Mm-mm. It's just a banner covering, you know, bricks. I don't know. I don't know what that is.
Fascinating.
You're going to call me weird for traveling around with a body on the back of my truck? Come on, Colorado City.
Oh, fascinating. So I'm assuming anything, if it's an ADOT permit or something with the state, that funeral home's going to take care of it or that director's taking care
of it. Yeah, so the cemetery is going to give me all that. Okay. I imagine, I haven't looked up the law on this. I did a long time ago, but I haven't brushed up on it. So I'm not going to give any legal advice on the air right now. But I know for a fact you have to have a permit.
I mean, you're getting firsthand knowledge of what you do in this.
Yeah, I'll have to report back. You know, once we get through this process, I can report back as to, hey, this is what you can do or how. You're always welcome to come and see me too in my office and we can talk about it. If you're thinking about doing this for a loved one. I don't want you to feel like, and what's interesting about this is like people will often say, I want a place to go where my loved ones can come and visit me, you know? So I'm okay with being cremated, but I want to be buried too somewhere. So there's a place for me to go. I get that a lot, but I just want the listeners to know that place that you ultimately go, if you choose to do that, doesn't have to be your ultimate place. Maybe your loved ones decide, well, let's move them over here closer to where we are now or something. It is possible. That's the point of this show, is that you can change that.
I'm assuming like that also now you will end up with the Hansons or I don't know, maybe you'll do something else. But point being is you kind of put all the family together.
I want to do that. And I've had, so this opened up a whole conversation with my wife.
Right. And then your brothers will want to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, well, what happens with those plots down there? My dad paid for those plots down there. So he owns two plots down in Wilcox.
That's right. He's paid for it.
Now they're just empty.
Technically real estate.
That's technically real estate. Right.
Yeah.
So what ended up happening was, this is how we played it. So one of my brothers bought the lots up in the new cemetery that mom and dad are going to go into and then swapped it for those down in Wilcox. Because my brother has he married a girl from Wilcox, and so she's got family there. He's got he's closer to there than any of us. We're all gone, the other brothers. I'm over here in Yuma. My oldest brother's up in Idaho. My other brother's over in California, just north of San Diego. So we don't go back to our hometown, like, hardly ever. And we don't need to be buried there. There would be no point to that. But this brought up these conversations with my wife. Well, where are we going to go? You know, and I told her about my Viking funeral plans. And she said, that's not happening. I said, well, okay. A man can wish. But she said, I want to be buried in Yuma. And I said, I don't want to be buried in Yuma. It's uglier than sin. You know, like, I want flowing grass. I want trees, that beautiful stuff, you know? She's like, no, I want to be by my family. A lot of her family's here in Yuma. And so she wins, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
What do I care anymore? I just, at this point in my life, I just hope my demise is actually soon rather than later.
Oh, mercy. That's not uplifting at all.
Coming from a father of six, it's like, when is this over, you know? But I digress. So this is a trip that I'm going to go on coming up. If you have questions about this kind of stuff, I'll let you know, in about a week, I'll have lived it. And so I can give you some personal experience or at least some tips that I've come to know about because I've lived this experience of moving a body from one location to another. And you can always call my office or shoot me an email and I can give you some advice going through that process. But I know when we were talking about this before we came on air, Cody, you were kind of interested about it. And so that's why we're talking about it. But it is going to be 4th of July week. I'm really bummed that because of the path that I'm going to go, I have to go through Flagstaff and then up through Colorado City, which will spit me out on the 15, going basically to Cedar City. That's where I'm going to meet my wife. She's going to meet me in Cedar City with the rest of my kids. And then we'll move on as kind of like a caravan from there. Because I'm not taking all my family down. I didn't want to drive a vehicle. We have a big van that could probably pull this trailer, but I didn't want to put that taxing load on it. I didn't know, you know, I've never done that. So I didn't want to do that. I'm just going to take my truck down. I have a little truck that can do all that. And then I'll meet my wife up in Cedar City. And we'll meet up on Friday night after I get done with my presentation, my legal presentation in Flagstaff. We'll meet up in Cedar City. And I'm bummed because 4th of July is going to be like 3 days from then, or 3 or 4 days from then when I'm doing all this. And I really wanted to stop at Valley of Fire in Nevada on my way up. Are you familiar with this?
Is this for fireworks?
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot about it, but I've heard people, you can get legit fireworks there. We're talking the ones that the municipalities use. These are massive. And I've heard.
Yeah.
You know.
The best ones I've gotten were out of New Mexico.
Oh, okay.
You know, like Coke can size bottle rockets, you know, like performance worthy ones.
Oh, yeah. No, these are called mortars.
There you go. Okay. So this is out of Nevada.
Yeah. It's right outside of Vegas on your way to St. George, the state line there. There's a place called Valley of Fire. It's on a reservation. It's actually a gas station. And you go into the gas station, and then there's a separate entrance into a back warehouse. We're talking a warehouse.
It sounds like Joe Dirt stuff.
I don't remember Joe Dirt. I love that movie, but I don't remember all the particulars of it. But I'm going to go with you on that.
Okay.
Okay? Yeah. So, but it's basically what it is a giant Quonset hut. You know those old school Quonset huts, but this is a new one.
Right.
It's massive. It's a warehouse. And just crates and crates of all sorts of stuff, you know, stacked up. It's like, you know, God Bless America, you know, that's the name of one or something. It's all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
And I've heard, you know, somebody's told me.
Are you going to get some on the way back?
Well, I want to get some on the way up. I think it's illegal. So I don't want to disclose on air whether I'm going to or not. I can't because I'm not going that way. That's what's bumming me out. But my wife is. But if she gets caught with fireworks, I think it's illegal. And I don't know what happened to her. I don't really care because I'm not with her. I've got the body on a different path. So I'm going to have her be the mule. I'm going to propose this to her. I don't think she'll go for it. But I'll let you know. Again, I'll report back if she's in jail in Nevada.
Just be like, hey, I got a curbside pickup. Go stop by, you know, Valley of Fire and pick it up for me.
I've heard they've got like state patrol people that just kind of like camp out there. And once you come out, they're like, gotcha.
Oh, wow.
You know? Well, they have to wait. I guess they're not there right there because it's the reservation. So they can do all this stuff. It's when you get off the reservation and they're like, hey, gotcha.
Yeah.
The Nevada people. I don't know. You know, we'll see. We got to go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some issues that I think are really relevant and kind of gets my blood boiling when it comes down to search and seizure issues and firearms. You know, us as Americans, we love our firearms, and we should. That's what helped us win the Revolutionary War. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this. You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. I've got Cody with me today, and we've been talking a lot about my next adventure this week, you know, going down to my hometown, disinterring my mother, and then I'm going to drive her up to her new resting place up in Utah, and that's going to be an adventure. But at the very beginning of the show, I talked about how I wanted to get into this recent development in a case that I doubt you've even heard of, but it's really troubling to me as I got into this. And we've talked about this on the show before, in my opinion, the overreach of government agencies. We've talked about a lot on our show how agencies tend to be overreaching because they exercise all three powers of government. they're technically through the executive branch. So the executive branch, they report to the president. He nominates, or he, well, yeah, I guess so. He would put forth names as agency directors. We call these czars. You've heard that term. They're not czars, but they're agency directors. And the Constitution says that they have to be approved by the Senate by at least 2/3 vote. And then they're put in as that agency's director. Well, agencies are really kind of problematic. And I view them as an affront to our Constitution. Our founders, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, and Cody, you can chime in on this. But my opinion is our founders deliberately divided our government powers into three for what we all learn about in eighth grade, the separation of powers doctrine. So you've got your legislative branch, the House and the Senate. You've got the judicial branch, the Supreme Court, the federal courts. And then you've got your executive, which is typically your police power. It's the power to enforce laws that are done by the legislative branch. If those laws are deemed to be an affront to our God-given rights, then the Supreme Court gets to weigh in on that and say, yeah, they actually are. Those violate the Constitution. They're unconstitutional, and those laws are not enforceable by the executive branch. So we have all these powers working in a kind of a symbiotic way. Well, what happened over the course of our United States history was at some point it was determined by a president and by our government entities that the president really doesn't know everything he needs to know about immigration from one country to another. He really doesn't know everything he probably should know about farming and pesticides and chemicals. He probably doesn't know a lot about, rent issues and the projects and things like that. And so for that purpose, over the course of our history, the government has created agencies, typically through the executive branch, and these agencies are known as the FBI, the CIA, a lot of three-letter acronyms, Border Patrol, Customs. We've got all sorts of them, the FDA. So these are agencies that are created, and the executive branch mans them with the president actually appoints the directors of these. And then once these things are going, so these agencies, they exercise all powers of government. Once they're created, they enforce the rules that they create. They create their own rules that we have to live up to or live by. If we don't, then they enforce those rules. If we have a problem with that, or we feel like we've been violated, or it's unconstitutional, we first have to go to their judicial panel of administrative judges, and they're going to determine whether or not that was constitutional or not. So they're exercising all three branches of government in one agency. And it's not just one agency we're talking about. We're talking hundreds and hundreds of agencies of the federal government. And one of those is ATF. ATF is one of the arms that the executive branch uses to enforce gun laws. Specifically, they are in charge of cracking down on, well, we know them as like explosives, machine guns, grenades, things that you're not supposed to have because of legislation back in the 60s. But so they are known to do what's called a no-knock warrant search of people's premises. We heard about this and we talked about this just a couple weeks ago, I think, or a few weeks ago in the Mar-a-Lago case where Jack Smith, the federal prosecutor or investigator, he went to Merrick Garland, and Merrick Garland approved a no-knock warrant on the raid of Mar-a-Lago to get what they supposed to be confidential or top secret documents that supposedly Trump had there, and they were authorized to use deadly force in doing that. And they spun this in such a way that they said, well, that's just, anytime we do this, that's just language we have in there, use of deadly force. It doesn't matter. This isn't like every other case, number one. Number two, what did you expect was going to happen? Like, if you are authorized to use deadly force and you come with guns blazing into a person's house unannounced, that has Secret Service detail there to protect your life, it's a high likelihood that there's going to be gunfire exchanged and they can kill you. No consequences. I give you that background because this case that I'm going to talk about, nobody really knows about or has heard about. This is over in Little Rock, Arkansas. And this was over, in March, this last March. There was a gentleman named Brian Malinowski. Brian Malinowski, if you see his picture, he is the most unthreatening person you've ever seen in your life. He looks like a nerd. Not that that's a bad thing, but he looks like that. If you Google him, you'll be able to see his picture. Brian Malinowski. He was the executive director of the Bill and Hillary Clinton National Airport there in Little Rock. And everybody knew him to be the nicest guy. He had a wife and a pug, just lived his own life. But he loved firearms, and so he would go to gun shows. And there's a rule that says that you can sell firearms at gun shows. You don't have to have a federal a firearms license to do that. And so he would do that. What happened was over the course of a couple of years, ATF would find guns all over the place that were originally registered to him that he had bought. So somehow they were getting from him to other people. Well, he was selling his guns all the time at gun shows.
So it's not like a straw purchase thing.
No.
It's legitimate, a collector.
No, they're finding them in like California. They were never used in a crime, yeah. But they would be found, you know, with people all over the place. So the ATF got a little nosy and they started thinking, well, he's selling way too many than he's supposed to, and he needs to have an FFL for that, a federal firearms license to do that because he's selling so many, which isn't really the rule or the law, but it's kind of subjective. And all reports are that this guy was the nicest guy. You know, he gets up in the morning, goes to work at the airport, comes home. He'd go to occasional gun shows. He had a lot of friends, you know, at the gun shows. Everybody, that's kind of like a tight-knit community. You agree, Cody?
Oh, yeah.
You're involved in that kind of stuff?
They know each other. Same barbecues. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, on March 19th, ATF, they got a no-knock warrant. Well, I guess it was a search warrant. But they put together this raid operation on his house. They hadn't given him any notice that he was under the radar or that, hey, you might be possibly going against what we think is the law. You probably need to have an FFL if you're dealing in this many guns or selling this many guns privately. They never told him anything about that. He had no idea. He had no idea that he was under the radar. Or they had an issue with what he was doing. And so on the morning of March 19th, ATF agents went to his door, and so the footage is there because he's got a Ring camera. And so you have these ATF people armed with machine guns and with assault rifles or assault weapons, I should say. It's a better term for it. You know, with ATF crosser and, you know, all these, you know, legit like SWAT looking people. And the first thing that happens is they're reaching with duct tape to put over the camera. So they cover the camera with duct tape. They knock maybe once or twice. So this is all caught. What's happening is that they're also becoming under scrutiny because they didn't wear body vest cams or anything to get the footage. But he's got cameras in his house, so it got a lot of the footage. And so they knock, wait 23 seconds, and then barge through the door. And this is pitch black in the morning, early in the morning. This is when they do these things. And he and his wife are in bed. And so this startles him. He gets up, grabs a gun. He tells his wife, you know, stay here. He goes to the hallway, sees figures, thinking he's being invaded by bad people, and pops off some rounds. And so the agents fire back and shoot him in the head. Dead. Just like that.
And this wasn't a mistaken identity. They knew the house they're going to.
Yeah, no.
Sometimes they do that. Sometimes they actually go into
that. No, they had a search warrant for this.
So they were expecting this kind of a situation.
What else would you expect? I mean, you know, when you go into a person's house, pitch black in the morning, and that's why they do it, is they're trying to kind of, this element of surprise, but surprise is not good in these situations. And could this have been done another way? I think it's really sad to me that there's no accountability to those agents that entered or to the judge that signed that warrant. That should have never happened.
And let me ask you, are these agents being protected, or are they losing their jobs over this?
Not at all. So this article comes from the who is this? Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Okay,
I saw it on CBS. You know, it's a national story. Yeah.
Yeah. No charges filed in fatal ATF shooting of Brian Malinowski, director of Clinton National Airport. That's the headline. Criminal charges will not be filed in the fatal officer-involved shooting of Brian Malinowski, who at the time was executive director of Bill and Hillary Clinton National Airport, Adams Field. The Pulaski County Prosecutor's Office announced this. This is Friday of last week. That's why I'm bringing it up, because it's relevant right now. And this is what they said. This is what the prosecutor's office said in that county. Quote, after review of the documents, statements, and evidence provided, we find that the agents, in other words, these ATF agents, their use of deadly force was justified, wrote the 6th Judicial District prosecuting attorney, Will Jones, in a letter addressed to a special agent for the ATF. So basically, that county is saying, we're not going to prosecute these ATF police people, because they were justified in what they did. They were protecting themselves from this firing of Brian in his own house in the middle of the night, unprovoked, right? Malinowski died like 2 days later after being shot in the head in the hospital. So this opens up a lot of questions. You know, what rights do we have as individuals? I thought, you know, as an American, and this is a common sentiment, is that we have a right to not be disturbed in our home, that police have to have a warrant to come in to search that. That's the common belief.
That's what you think.
And technically they had a warrant, but was it reasonable to knock, wait 23 seconds when a person's in the dead of night before you barge through the door, right? That to me, that's unreasonable. You can't even get to the door in 23 seconds.
Well, and yeah, it's supposed to be at a time that's inconvenient, that you're not, you know,
able to get to your guns and return fire, right?
You're disoriented. But that's exactly when people burglarize your house, you know, like home invasion. So you're acting like a home invader.
So personally, this needs to change. There's no way around it. This is horrible. This isn't like Brian was known to do drugs. The whole purpose of this type of warrant is to catch illicit stuff, evidence from being destroyed, such as cocaine or drugs, that
flushable things.
Yeah, exactly right. That it's imminent to get in there and grab that before it gets disposed of. You can't flush a gun down the toilet. This guy had no record of it. He was the nicest guy. You look at his picture, you're like, this dude.
He had a pug.
Yeah, he was.
At least they didn't shoot the dog.
Yeah, that's true. I guess there's a bright side. Well, I'll leave you with that. We got to go. This is Life, Death, and the Law. We'll talk to you next week.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson.